Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thank you for joining me live here on Real Liberty Media or downloading the podcast, whichever. Hope I have a great show planned for you tonight. At least in my mind, I do. That's all that matters, right? Hey, this is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I'm just a guy having fun, making light of the darkness. No, man, I got some stuff today. I'm not kidding. Oh. Do I have dead air? Oh, I do. What's the matter here? Let's see. Oh, I got it. All right, let's try this again. This is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me live here on Real Liberty Media or downloading the podcast, whichever it is you do. Oh, let's get the camera on. Oh my goodness, that was a rough start. On the video, it's going to be fine, but on the audio, I'll have to cut this part out. But I didn't have my, I didn't have my mic channel turned on in the audio. So here we go. Anyway, like I was saying, this is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media. And I don't turn left, if you know what I mean. I'm just a guy having fun making some light of the darkness, shining some light on the darkness. I think that's the way we'll look at it from here on out. If you guys are on a social media platform of any kind, could you please post that we're live? Or, when you listen to it, you could post and share with your friends. That'll help grow the channel. I appreciate that. Man, there's a lot of changes like happening in social media. It's crazy. I have some things I want to talk about for just a minute there, too. I have to turn my stupid phone off. Oh, my God. I hate that. Okay. Seriously, I was so rushed today. I'm lucky I got anything going. Seriously. I was working on some notes. And, like at 5:20, I was like, holy cow, I am so far behind, which is no big deal, really. I mean, I could honestly, I could actually do an hour show with no notes and literally come in here in 5 minutes, start everything up and get going. But usually, I like it to be a little more polished than it was today. Oh, well, that's kind of funny. You know, back when I started this podcast, thanks to Grimner and Moose Girl for finding me, and giving me this opportunity, I was so crazy nervous about everything and trying to figure out how to do the, audio and how to play music over the channel without it coming over the microphone and, just all that stuff. And now it's so easy. And of course, you got to have a day once in a while where you, to keep you humble. That's what today did, was keep me humble, make me realize, I got to take care of business before I go live here. And I have something really weird on my wiring. Now I know what it is. Okay, so we're perfectly fine, I think. I got to tell you, on the other side of this podcast, I have a delicious dinner waiting. It's ready to go. It'll be piping hot and delicious. It's a pork loin, kind of cooked in a casserole dish with some applesauce and sauerkraut on it and mashed potatoes. I know it doesn't sound like much, but that's like a perfect dinner. Perfect homestead dinner, I guess. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah, I know. Really, it's I'm really looking forward to it. I finished cardiac rehab today, phase two, and that's awesome because you know I feel fantastic. So probably I'll drop dead at the end of this or in the middle of it. Who knows? Well, at least it'd be on video. Everybody could see it, and I'd be a big sensation on TikTok, I guess, or whatever. No, but I feel awesome, and it was really good to see the improvements that I've made in the I don't know how long it's been, probably at least 2 months, I think it feels like, maybe a little bit more. But for those of you who follow your whole heart rate thing, I can tell you that I did 44 minutes of exercise today with my heart rate around 130. So really it was between 123 and 134, but I mostly tried to keep it right at 130 once I got to 130. And yeah, 44 minutes, man. Felt good, didn't have any problems, no issues. I did the 6 minute walk. I think it was 1500 feet in 6 minutes. I could be wrong about that. But yeah, things are going well. So, you know, it's time to move on, heal from the spike protein. I wanted to kind of cover that again too. Where I got a lot of the information on the last show about healing from the spike protein is from this website. I want to bring it up for you. Where is it? Oh my God, really? I got it. I got it. Be patient. Don't worry. It's right here. There it is. Boom. Nope. Here it is. I'm bringing it up right now. Okay. This is the FLCCC, and that's their website. And it's a critical COVID care alliance. COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance. Now listen, they have all kinds of protocols on there. Really important to I'll put this link, definitely put this link in the show notes. Because if you need hospital protocols, if you need treatment protocols, and if you need recovery protocols, like we talked about on the last show, this is a place to go. These are the doctors who held to their beliefs throughout that whole COVID thing, stuck to their guns and said, this is the way you handle this. This is the proper way to handle this. So please go to that site, support them if you can support them. And I'm going to take my headphones off, sorry. Yeah, support them if you can support them. And or just go and get the information. It's free. It's right there for you. Everything you need to know about detoxing from the vaccine, about getting the proper care if you're infected with COVID, about getting the proper care if you're infected with the vaccine, it's there. So check it out. It's FLCCC Alliance, FLCCC Alliance. The actual website is called COVID-19criticalcare.com. These guys are the ones who were brave enough to take all the hits from their medical board, from the federal government, all the criticism from all of the social media platforms. They got canceled from everything that they were a part of before, and they kept on going as so many of us should have done, as people throughout the country should have not put up for this. For this kind of dictation from the federal government. Scientists should have stood up, and corporations, hospitals, healthcare centers should have said no to everything that they tried to push. But you know what? The time is coming. I'm telling you, this is kind of a cool time to be. It's kind of cool to be on the other side of this thing because Things are going to start happening. And if things don't start happening, then I think there's a whole nother approach that we have to take to set things straight. Because one of the stories I'm going to talk about today, probably toward the end of the show, is this pandemic amnesty. And I don't know if you've heard about it or not, but I'm going to tell you, it literally almost made my head explode when I heard it. And I heard it before lunchtime on Thursday, I think. And I came home for lunch. No, it had to have been Monday. Oh, yeah, I think it was Monday. And I came home for, I don't know what day it was, but I came home for lunch, and it was all I could talk about. I was just constantly, like, going on about this ridiculous pandemic amnesty, and I was getting madder and madder by the minute. And as a matter of fact, even I think it was last night or the night before, I literally had to get up and get away from the computer because I was emotional. Let's say that. I was emotional about this whole idea, and then hearing more and more people kind of getting on the bandwagon. And yeah, it was driving me crazy, and I was just thinking, oh no, you're not getting off that easy. We are not going to let that happen. So I'll talk about that a little later. And let's see. Oh, I wanted to talk about Twitter a little bit. Let me see. Did I cover everything? Oh, Behind the Woodshed. You can catch Hal Anthony Behind the Woodshed every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern. Fantastic two-hour show filled with information. The guy talks for 2 hours, doesn't take a break, doesn't take a drink. His notes are really well documented. So, you know, if you go to Real Liberty Media, you can go to his notes and kind of see everything there. Listen to his show. He's awesome. He is really awesome. So Sundays, 3 p.m. Eastern, Behind the Woodshed with Hal Anthony. Show him some support. He's fantastic. I don't know what more I can say about him. I did want to tell you guys, so I listened to the entire The Real Anthony Fauci movie. And you talk about something else. So I think this is what happened. I think I started getting overloaded with hate. And contrary to popular belief, hate is one of those emotions that any shrink will tell you. You need to experience that emotion along with all the other emotions that humans are meant to experience. So, I was hating a lot the last few days. And I think for good reason. I think for good reason. And I was thinking today, honest to God, can somebody tell me one single thing Anthony Fauci has done that has been good? I'm not kidding. I'm seriously not kidding. If he has had one single bit, if he has contributed one tiny little bit of goodness to humanity, number one, I'd like to compare that to the damage he caused getting there and to the lives he took getting there and see if it was really worth it, and then see if we can really call that good for humanity. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., of course, is the one who wrote the book, The Real Anthony Fauci, and I ordered that book the second I heard about it. That book is a book, at least for me, I can only take so much of it at a time, honestly. I think it's like war documentaries, like real war documentaries. I don't remember if you experienced the Iraq War, for instance. And it was like you could only take so much damage to humanity. I could only take so much. And I think I'm a pretty tough guy. I think I've seen a lot of stuff in my lifetime. I've seen some horrific stuff in my lifetime. Stuff that I won't even talk about. I don't even think... Yeah, very few people I have shared the most horrendous things I've ever experienced. Because some things, I mean, it's just not worth sharing with people, honest to God. You know, I think for myself, if I tell this person what I experienced, you know, a couple instances of things in my life, would they really benefit from it? Like, is it really worth telling people? As far as like coping with it, I think I coped with it well, and if I needed some kind of, you know, counseling, I would have sought it out. But honestly, there's some things in this world that you see, and there's really no reason to share it. But like I was saying, so the real Anthony Fauci book, I could only read, so I wanted to kind of devour that entire book, like sit down and bang it out in a couple hours or a couple days maybe, because there's so much footnotes and documentation that goes along with it that I would also like to kind of follow up on. And that kind of reading, you just can't cruise through that kind of reading. But I couldn't. I mean, it was impossible. I couldn't. I could only take so much before I'd have to get away from that book and clear my brain and my, you know, kind of just like clean myself so I could go sleep peacefully that night or interact with my wife and family and grandkids without that grating feeling of having to have read this stuff. And of course, I didn't have to read it. I read it because I wanted to know what Robert F. Kennedy Jr. had to say about this guy, because apparently he has some real inside information. And surely that's what he did. And let me tell you, it's not pretty. Now, it seems to me that the real Anthony Fauci movie, it didn't cost me anything. And I actually recorded the audio for it because I'm afraid it's going to disappear, and I don't want it to disappear. So I sat through, I don't know, it's like 3 hours, and recorded it, and I sat here while it was recording so I could kind of monitor and make sure that the recording was fine, and yeah, everything's fine. But it seems to me like they were saying, okay, after this initial kind of viewing, this is going to disappear. And I didn't know if they meant like, you know, somebody was going to censor it, if they were going to take it down or whatever. But anyway, if you get a chance to see or listen to the real Anthony Fauci movie, please do. It's a documentary. And I'm sure there was some stuff in there that I never got to in the book. I've kind of put the book aside for a while, which is another reason I listened to the 3-hour program. But still, I'm going to have to go back and get into it because the documentation, man, the documentation. You know, that's something that we have lacked so much of in this last couple years. You know, you're going to hear, I don't know, the president was going on TV tonight to jabber on about whatever he's going to jabber on about. I think it has something to do with the insurrection and how, you know, conservative voters, MAGA Trump supporters are going to claim that this election, you know, results aren't real or whatever. And he's going to talk about how we need, you know, less conservatives, basically. And you're going to hear all about that tomorrow, I'm sure. But the point is, any of the stuff that he's going to talk about, there's the documentation on both sides of those arguments has not been presented. My sister and I are complete opposites on the spectrum of politics. Like, she's extreme liberal, and I'm not. you know, I would say for a large portion of my life I was a conservative, but now I think anarchy is about the best thing, or anarcho-capitalism is a pretty good fit. But, you know, like, we can have discussions. We can literally have discussions with information for each other, you know, and kind of, the thing is, like, people, we're not doing that anymore. We're not having discussions, which I'm hoping, although I heard some stuff today about Twitter that sounded to me like the same old thing. I mean, it really did. I don't know if Twitter has changed or not. I got away from Twitter a few years ago, and I stayed out of it during the whole cancel culture thing, except for the little tiny Twitter account I have to promote this show. So I haven't, and that has very few people that I've connected with, because I didn't want to have a bunch of people. I just didn't want to. So I don't know what Twitter is like today, like today, right now, today, November 2nd, 2022. But I heard something today that, you know, there's going to be some moderation, and, you know, people who said hateful things before probably aren't going to get right back on. And, you know, if you said hateful things, I don't know what really is going to go on. What I did want to say about Twitter is kind of, you know, if you listen to the mainstream media, if you listen to the other, now other, social platforms, you'll hear all the liberals, you know, whining and crying about Elon Musk taking over Twitter, and how, you know, they're calling for boycotts. And I wanted to say this one thing. Here's a perfect example. Twitter's going to be fine, with or without the sponsors that they had a week ago. And I'll tell you why. Because companies who truly support free speech are going to sponsor Twitter and people on Twitter, and they're going to advertise on Twitter. Look at Mike Lindell, for crying out loud, the MyPillow guy. Mike Lindell, you can go see his history anywhere on the internet. You can see his history that led him to make MyPillow. That guy, after the election, he got together a bunch of forensic computer technologists, you know, to show how votes were, like, jammed into these machines, how votes just suddenly appeared in these machines without any tabulation of the voting pamphlet, or the paper pamphlet, or the paper, whatever they call it. And he was immediately canceled, like removed. And everybody said that they were going to, you know, pull his sponsoring, that they were going to pull sponsorship from him. And he did. He lost a lot of advertisement. He got taken off of a lot of mainstream media, you know, sites. What's Mike Lindell doing today? He's doing MyPillow. And he's very successful still, because people who support free speech, not necessarily aligning themselves with, you know, yeah, the election was stolen, or yeah, there was some stuff that went on in the election that was illegal or improper, or doesn't make any sense when you have forensic computer analysts showing you directly how these machines were on the internet and how data was, you know, coming in when it shouldn't have been, and at times when there were no ballots to be counted, or stacks of ballots that people were sitting there filling out, one person sitting there filling out ballot after ballot after ballot, and it being put in the machine. I mean, what is that? You can't have somebody just sit at a machine and feed ballots and call it, you know, an appropriate election. But anyway, we're going to see what happens in the next couple days. And I know next week, you know, the election is on, well, it's on Tuesday for conservatives and Republicans, and the voting is on Wednesday for the liberals and independents. I think that's how it's working out this year. Yeah, that's misinformation, right? Anyway, so I think Twitter's going to be fine because companies are going to support Twitter. Companies who support free speech are going to come in and take those advertising spots, pay for those spots, because Twitter is a very successful social media platform. And it will continue to be a very successful social media platform. It'll just have, you know, opposing viewpoints on it now. It won't be part of the government, media, media outlet. It won't be controlled by the government anymore. Although it may be, they're investigating Musk. I heard that today too. Yeah, I can't wait. I think things are going to change and it's going to be cool. Okay, so next week on Tuesday, people are going to cast their votes. And I'm already prepared for some disappointment. Like, I don't think results are going to be available on Wednesday because various reasons. In Oregon here, for sure, we have the worst, absolute worst. Well, we have retards trying to count ballots here in Oregon, obviously. You know, I forget the name of the person, Shamia Fagan, just complete idiot when it comes to handling the vote counting in Oregon. And I think, you know, I think that no matter what, they're going to do everything they can to make this look like that it's not a red wave and that, you know, Oregon, that, you know, I can tell you this. I'm already prepared for this. On Tuesday night, they're going to say these Democrats won these elections. And about 3 weeks later, they're going to be like, oh, yeah, well, they didn't win. So, you know, we counted and, yeah, they didn't win. But initially, you're going to hear all of these mainstream media outlets locally call the Democrats winners right off the bat. And then it'll be funny because they'll say, well, we haven't been able to count all the votes. And it'll go on and on and on, you know, and everybody be waiting like crazy. I just hope that the governorship in Oregon goes to the Republican for one reason. Because I want her to walk in and say, drop this stupid Emergency Powers Act, and there's no more masks needed anywhere in Oregon, period. Take them off, and let's move on. So anyway, we'll see what happens with Elon Musk and Twitter. I'm looking forward to some change, and some change for the good of everybody. You know, when I get to this pandemic amnesty later on in the show, what you're going to find out is this person is a professor at Brown University. And they talk as if, and I'm kind of going to assume, that they really are not, they weren't exposed to the truth. And they weren't exposed to the truth because they didn't choose to be exposed to the truth. I heard a horrifying statistic today on a radio station. I did a lot of running around today. I heard a kind of horrifying statistic today that some age group of, I think, people under 30 years old, when asked where they get their news from, they get their news from TikTok. Now, I can't think of a worse place to get your news from, honestly, because it's owned by China, and I'm sure there's no manipulation of information going on there. But just imagine that. So we have a whole generation of people right now who have grown up with TikTok, and that's what they consider their news source. And I really can't blame them because, you know, if you look at the mainstream media news sources that have been out there for decades, well, basically a century and more, they're a joke. It's just if the people who are on TikTok now had any kind of influencers who were older than them who could tell them, look, this, don't listen to this. This is propaganda. I mean, you're not getting the full story. Well, that probably worked, but then what happened is they grew up with TikTok, and then they figure out, you know, hey, the people on TikTok are cool, and my friends are cool. That's where I'm going to get my news, and that's not good either. It's not good to have one-sided information, at least in my opinion. I try and listen to kind of all sides myself. I do. Can't. Always. I don't think I need to. I think independent news sources do a pretty good job of kind of getting information out there in a way that you can kind of maybe understand it. Hey, I wanted to talk about this for just a minute. This is Save the Whatever. I thought this was interesting. The title's not going to show up on the screen here because they use a weird layout on their website. But I'm going to read it to you. It says, environmentalists threatened to sue over livestock trespass in New Mexico. And I just thought to myself immediately today when I read this headline, I was like, oh, you know, what are we saving now? You know, and of course, this is not about saving anything. It's about destroying the meat industry, which I don't know why people want to do this. But one thing I thought about is, you know, stuff like this is going to go by the wayside when you can't feed yourself or you can't shelter yourself or you can't warm yourself. And it reminded me of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you don't know Maslow, you probably never took Psychology 101, which, you know, I'm sure every Psych 101 class talks about Maslow. And I don't have a lot of respect for psychologists in the first place. But I thought he did a pretty good job at laying this out. So I'll show you this. He uses this little pyramid. Here it is. Oh, this is a better kind of pyramid. So it's a pyramid, but it's got these lines out the side. So at the bottom of the pyramid, the most basic needs are air, water, food, shelter, sleep, clothing, and reproduction. Now think about that. If it's true that we're getting ready to go into, you know, a severe recession, a worldwide recession, and we already have worldwide inflation, probably everybody but Russia and China, I don't know, honestly, if they do or not. If you're having trouble getting water, food, shelter, sleep, I mean, those four things, if it becomes difficult to feed yourself and get to water and get some sleep in a shelter where you're warm or cool when the outside temperature is hot or cold, freezing, yeah, you're not going to be too concerned about, oh yeah, what was it? Let's see what it was that they were suing about. They filed a 60-day notice of intent. Let's see why. I wanted to remember which. There's like three things. One was a desert owl. The New Mexico meadow jumping mouse, the Mexican spotted owl, and the Jemez mountain salamander. So these people, they're obviously, they have, and seriously, I'm being serious about this. They have met probably, let me move this up so you can. Okay, so they've probably met these physiological needs. They probably met their safety needs. They probably met their love and belonging needs. Now they're up here in this esteem area and self-actualization. So the two highest points on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, these people are in that area because they're looking for recognition. They're looking for a pat on the back because they're going to try and save some salamander out in the middle of the New Mexican desert, or the New Mexican spotted owl, or salamander owl, and what was the other thing? God dang it, forgot already. See how important it was to me? I forgot already. Oh, the jumping mouse. So the jumping mouse, the Mexican spotted owl, and a salamander. So these people are very comfortable in their lives. You know, all their needs have been met. Now they're just looking for self-esteem, to have a bunch of people pat them on the back that they destroyed, you know, free-range cattle in this area, and they saved a salamander, a spotted owl, and a jumping mouse, which probably, those three things probably don't contribute a whole lot to life on Earth. I'm not saying they're not valuable. I'm sure they are. But so many times we step in and try and save species that should have gone extinct, you know? And I'm not saying that these should have. I'm just saying, you know, we're getting to the point where we think what we do is the best thing for the world or the best thing for this species, when maybe the best thing for this species is for it to go extinct, any one of those three. But no, we're going to file a lawsuit because the government hasn't protected these three critters, and you got beef walking around there trampling on them, for God's sakes. And they just can't seem to adapt and thrive with these cattle ranging freely in the New Mexican desert. For God's sake. Anyway, I thought it was kind of interesting. And really, I'm thinking, okay, in a year or so, let's see how excited you are to protect these three species when you can't get some food. And man, more stuff is coming at us. I have to pull up my notes from my last show because there's something in there. Oh no, here it is. Oh good, it's even in today's notes. How about that? I actually moved some forward. Fire at Moses Lake fertilizer plant under investigation. Seriously, I'm not kidding. Like, this plant is only a few years old. Let's see how old it is. This fire was on October 23rd. Gosh darn it, I should have had these notes available. Anyway, this thing is not 10 years old. This fertilizer plant is literally like a few years old, and it burns to the ground. Honestly, fertilizer plant. Like, how can you call this coincidental? It's just impossible for so many food supply businesses, warehouses to burn to the ground, so many food processing plants to burn to the ground. It is not coincidence. Can't be. It just can't be. You cannot have this many coincidences that didn't happen 50 years ago, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20, 10 years ago, and all of a sudden in a year you have, and I know somebody's going to say, well, all those plants, you know, they're ready to go. No, they weren't. You know, there's suspicious accidents that called these places to burn to the ground or otherwise become destroyed or just be interrupted so they can't possibly produce enough food for everybody in the coming year. And thank God, man. I'm not kidding. I was out in my, I was just out looking at the property, yesterday. And I was looking at the orchard and I was just thinking, I was trying to remember when we started planting trees in the orchard. I think it was 2008. Well, the last time we were thinking that there was going to be, you know, disasters coming. As far as food shortages. And we were actually talking about this with the kids and grandkids, how we had stored food, you know, back then. Also, we went through this whole period, and it wasn't bad, but how would I know that? Because I was prepared, at least somewhat prepared. So I don't know what this next year is going to be like. But at least I'm prepared. I mean, there's food out there. You know, we grew a bunch of food this year. We're ready to do it again in a few months, start all over. We still have food to process. So we're going to make it through the winter anyway, I hope. Let's get into this story. this pandemic amnesty. And I'll tell you why this was driving me crazy. It was driving me crazy because I was thinking to myself, you hear a lot of talk about the red tsunami, you know, and everybody's talking about how many seats are going to change in the House and the Senate and all that stuff. It doesn't matter, honestly. Honestly, to me, it doesn't matter. I'd love to see a red shift. Yeah, sure I would. But here's the problem. Like, why haven't the lawmakers who are elected right now, why haven't they brought charges against people? And I'm not kidding about that. Laws have been broken, and it's time for people to pay the price. You know, mainstream media information, social media platform, you know, corruption, ownership by the government, state-run media, I don't care. There's lawmakers who are elected and serving in office who should have done something by now. So if there's a big red wave, heads better start rolling. Because if they don't, there's only one other solution to the problem. Honest to God, there's only one other solution. And we'll talk about that when we get there. But let's get into this article by Emily Oster. Oh, I wish... I'm not going to move this over. I'm just going to read it to you. Unfortunately, there's a picture and then the title. It says, "Let's declare a pandemic amnesty. We need to forgive one another for what we did and said when we were in the dark about COVID," right? And that's not going to line up that good either, but I'm just going to read some stuff to you with my reaction to it. And I want to kind of start out by telling you that there was a time, this is in the Atlantic magazine. I don't even know if it's a magazine anymore. Maybe it's just online like so many other things are. But I remember back in the day, and I wonder how many of you can kind of share this bit of nostalgia with me. You know, there was a time when students would come door to door and sell magazine subscriptions. And, you know, when the magazines would be like ridiculously cheap in price for a year or 6 months or whatever. And the more magazines you got, the better deal you got. So like, I don't know, you could get like 10 magazines for $10 for a year, something stupid like that. And, you know, we were trying to figure out, you know, which magazines we should get. And I had seen this is a long time ago, 30 years ago or something ridiculous, I don't know. And I had seen and read the Atlantic magazine before. And thought, oh yeah, I like some articles in that, you know, so we put that on in our stack, right? And then, you know, the crazy thing is, and every month you got these 10 magazines that came, and, you know, they just piled up, and you couldn't possibly read them all, you know, or get to all the articles. But it was nice to have them around, you know, if you needed something to pick up. And you'd have friends come over and they'd be like, oh, you have the Atlantic magazine, that's cool. I remember Harper's Bazaar was another one. I always got Scientific American and Omni. And anyway, I mean, I did at the time enjoy reading some articles out of the Atlantic magazine. So Oster's article is a plea for forgiveness for how people behaved during the pandemic. Now, I'm just going to tell you ahead of time. I'm not going to tell you exactly what she does, but she is a teacher, I'm going to say for now, at Brown University. Now, Brown University, no kidding, is no slouch university. I mean, this is one of those universities like I probably couldn't have got into, I don't know, I kind of thought I could get into wherever I wanted to get into at the time, but hell, I was pretty naive back then. So she starts out by telling some story about her brainwashed kid screaming social distancing to another child that got too close to him when he was out on a hiking trail. So her and her family would go hiking, and they would have their mask below their, you know, not on, they wouldn't be wearing their mask. And the person, whoever was in front as they were hiking along, if they saw somebody else coming, they would use a hand signal and everybody would put their mask on, right? And so they were passing this other group of people, I assume, and a child walked by without a mask on, and her child screamed out, "Social distancing!" And so she's looking for forgiveness for having her brainwashed kid, you know, shout out this social distancing command. Another little Hitler on the, you know, on the rise there by being given the authority to, you know, enforce social distancing when you're out on a hiking trail outside and whatever. So she's looking for some forgiveness. Now, apparently Miss Oster is some kind of teacher at Brown University, since she says she is co-teaching a course there. She says, "Some of these choices turned out better than others. To take an example close to my own work, there is an emerging, if not universal, consensus that schools in the U.S. were closed for too long. The health risks of in-school spread were relatively low," she says, "whereas the cost to students' well-being and educational progress were high. The latest figures on learning loss are alarming," she says. "But in spring and summer, we had only glimmers of information. Reasonable people, people who cared about children and teachers, advocate on both sides of the reopening debate. But here's the problem. This woman who is teaching at Brown University apparently doesn't know how to go out and find information. Apparently, she probably parrots the same information that comes out of the state-run media. Apparently, she's all for censorship, since she couldn't find any information out there. She said we had scarce information, glimmers of information. That's not true. Here on Real Liberty Media, we had people before me who were carrying that torch. People who had information that you really didn't have to have any real documentation to support. I mean, if you had a brain, you could come to some of these conclusions. But this woman, who is either a teacher or professor at a very prestigious university, she says we only had glimmers of information. The only reason we had glimmers of information, this is my comments, is because big tech and MSM, mainstream media, colluded to limit information so the sheeple would not have truth of facts to make rational, healthy decisions. I hope that is taught in your Brown University class, though I am fairly sure it won't be. You have to turn out more sheeple for the next slaughter. No kidding, man. These young people who are, well, being taught and not being taught how to solve problems and how to find information and how to challenge authority. My God, having grown up in the decades I have, it blows my mind that we have a dumbed down society right now who have no interest in challenging authority. They think that the federal government is the final answer. And I'm not kidding. I wish they saw and knew what I have seen and done to show them how some of these people arrive at their positions. I mean, there's no clearer example than the current administration. You just look down the line at all of the appointees and all of these positions. Do they actually have experience in their field? No, they don't. But do they have more than one pronoun? Yeah, they do. Are they transgender or transsexual or, you know, whatever? Yeah, they are. Are they gay or LGBTQ? Yeah, they are. Does that make them effective at what they're doing? No, it doesn't. Does it make them experts in their field? It absolutely does not. It absolutely does not. Here you have, you know, another good example. This person is a teacher or professor at Brown University, and they can't, and And wait until you find out what department she is in. And I know she had to go through some classes, man, like statistics and stuff to get to where she is. And she can't go out and find information. And she doesn't challenge information by using her own intelligence to go look for these, to go look for documentation that would support any of this stuff. Anyway, let's go on. Another example, when the vaccines came out, this is her words. We lacked definitive data on the relative efficacies of the Johnson & Johnson shot versus the mRNA options from Pfizer and Moderna. When the vaccines came out, we lacked definitive data on the relative efficacies of the Johnson & Johnson shot versus the mRNA option from Pfizer and Moderna. You know why? Because they didn't want us to know any of the truth about these three entities, these three juices. And now we know, and I hope that Ms. Oster is paying attention. The CDC knew that these things weren't effective. Pfizer and Moderna knew that these things weren't effective. Johnson & Johnson knew, you know, what kind of injuries came with this jab juice. They all knew. The federal government didn't want you to know. We skipped the whole process of safe and effective trials through the FDA because, you know, it was such an emergency. We now know that the manufacturers knew their jab juice didn't work, but the U.S. government, big tech, and MSM prevented you from learning. This is my stuff. Prevented you from learning that, and you didn't care enough to go look for the information from real experts, but chose to listen to the experts or clowns in the ruling class, federal government, MSM, and social media platforms. Are you really doing any good teaching those valuable students at Brown? Honestly, I kind of wonder if she is doing any good. She almost gives credit here, but not quite. It must hurt so much to face reality and the truth now that real science is being done and real results are being produced. I am sure she probably feels some responsibility to some people she led astray. Maybe she led some of her elderly family members to the death regimen at the hospital after a couple jabs and some boosters. Of course, she will be asking for amnesty. Of course, she will be. All of this gloating, this is her words, all of this gloating and defensiveness continues to gobble up a lot of social energy, she says, and to drive the culture wars, especially on the internet, which is funny, that is not happening. Have you been a part of any social media platform where there's actually any back and forth? No, because they take down the fourth. They censor any misinformation. You know, and they actually came out and said, yeah, we basically just didn't want any opposition to anything we said. I mean, literally, the federal government has said that. Yeah, we didn't want you to discuss this at all. We didn't want opposing views. I mean, look at ivermectin, for crying out loud. One of the greatest drugs for treating COVID, period. Period. One of the greatest drugs for treating COVID, and you couldn't get it. They listen to how horrible this is. They literally took ivermectin out of warehouses, put it in huge piles, and burned it so you couldn't get it. Tell me this isn't a war against the people. It is definitely a war against the people. Let's see. What does she go on to say? These discussions are heated, unpleasant, and ultimately unproductive, she says. In the face of so much uncertainty, getting something right had a hefty element of luck, not really, and similarly, getting something wrong wasn't a moral failing. Treating pandemic choices as a scorecard on which some people racked up more points than others is preventing us from moving forward. We have to put these fights aside and declare a pandemic amnesty, she says. We can leave out the willful purveyors of actual misinformation while forgiving the hard calls that people had no choice but to make with imperfect knowledge. And that is absolutely the craziest false statement she makes in this entire article. People had a choice. They could have made the correct choice. From Trump all the way down, all of them could have made a choice. Like, hey, yeah, this pandemic looks bad, but we don't know what this jab is going to do. We really ought to do some safety testing before we start sticking it into every human being on the face of the earth. But no, the choice was made by, who knows, Anthony Fauci, to make sure everybody got it and there was no opposition. And people, even the guy who created the mRNA technology, when he started talking about how, you know, he had some, you know, warnings to give us about it. Oh no, you shut him up and take away his platform because, you know, he can't be trusted. But we need to learn from our mistakes and then let them go. We need to forgive the attacks too. Because I thought schools should reopen and argued that kids as a group were not at high risk, I was called a teacher killer and a genocidaire. It wasn't pleasant, but feelings were high, and I certainly don't need to dissect and rehash that time for the rest of my days. Moving on is crucial now because the pandemic created many problems that we still need to solve. Yeah, it sure did. Yeah, and how are we going to solve it? Are we going to have true discourse on it? Like, what in your world, what problems did it create in your world, Miss Oster? Really, what? I really want to know what problems it caused in your world. Like losing your right to freely assemble, or the right to speak freely, the right to not have experimental drugs or snake oils used on you, the right to live, or the right to make a medical decision about your care that had been proven over and over again to be more effective at saving lives and easing the course of COVID than the death regimen at any given hospital, the right to sue manufacturers for a product that causes more injuries than it prevents the spread of a disease, or maybe the right to protect your own children from people like you. She says the standard saying is that those who forget history are doomed to repeat it, but dwelling on the mistakes of history can lead to a repetitive doom loop as well. Let's acknowledge that we made complicated choices in the face of deep uncertainty and then try to work together to build back and move forward. Doesn't that sound nice now? Two years after taking away all those rights? Let's see, who should have amnesty? You think Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook, Twitter, Trump, Fauci, Biden, the CDC, the NIH, Randy Weingard, your governor, your local sheriff, your local school board members? This is crazy. You're not going to believe what she teaches at Brown University. Emily Oster is an economist at Brown University. An economist. Seriously. You really can't be an economist without going through some pretty serious statistics courses. You have to have the ability to analyze stats, to analyze trends, to look deeper than superficial stuff that goes on in the economy. Hell, and to become an economist, you probably have to get really deep into, like, world economies. Wow, time is cruising. Hey, thank you guys for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. Give us a thumbs up. Show us some support. Share us with your social media friends. And be sure and listen to me every Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.